This is Block by Block, a community news program from WPPM LP 106.5 FM, where we explore issues affecting the Philadelphia area with news reports from members of the community. I'm Julia Lowe.
And I'm Kay Michelle Watson. In the next half hour, we'll hear stories from our community news reporters about a community center in West Philly, a Day of the Dead celebration taking place in a Philadelphia garden this weekend, and a 24th annual Peoplehood Parade.
But first, 2 decades ago, the City of Philadelphia announced plans to provide free wireless internet access by launching a series of city-owned Wi-Fi hotspots. But that program was never fully implemented, and Pennsylvania eventually passed a law that bans cities from launching their own wireless networks. There's nothing stopping community organizations from building them, though. And now a group called Philly Community Wireless is working to bridge the digital divide by offering free Wi-Fi in parts of the city. My co-host Kay Michelle Watson spoke with one of the people involved in that effort.
My name is Leanne Prisbolowski, and I work as the Community Outreach Manager at Philly Community Wireless. We build community-controlled wireless internet networks across, right now we're located in North Philadelphia, but ideally in the future, you know, all over the city. And our goal is really to build a baseline of internet access for everyone, including people who maybe have some financial burdens, including people who are part of the unhoused population or maybe live a little bit more transiently. We install our Wi-Fi in both private and public spaces. In terms of cost of our service, we will never ask for your credit card. We do not charge for internet service at your home or in your space. The only related fee is we do have to draw power. Mm-hmm. And so there's a minor kind of electricity pull. And so there's some very few dollars per month of electricity being used.
Have you had conversations with the city? And if you have, what's been the outcome or feedback?
So in the city of Philadelphia, about 20 years ago, there was an effort to set up municipally owned public Wi-Fi with the idea that a publicly owned service could deliver something mm-hmm. different than a private ISP could. And unfortunately, back 20 years ago, there was a lot of lobbying efforts. There was a lot of discussion, and eventually in the state of Pennsylvania and as well in over 20 other states around the country, municipal Wi-Fi is now banned. So it's not possible to have a municipally owned internet service in the city of Philadelphia. So what we are, we're community Wi-Fi. We are community controlled. Yes. We're a non-institutional organization. We're not the city. We have certainly talked with the city and we've received some funding support from the city. The city is very dedicated, I think, to digital equity and ensuring, you know, more digital equity here in Philadelphia. But it's not actually possible to provide, at the moment at least, to provide a municipal public internet service.
The install, is that something, if you're using volunteers, are they trained? How long does a trainee take? What is involved with that if someone's interested in volunteering?
We have a few training processes, but you can come out and install relatively quickly as long as we deem it to be a beginner-friendly install. And what we mean by that is a very safe, you know, you're not going to be scaling a two-story ladder, for example. That's right. Something that we want to know that you're more comfortable with that kind of thing. And so that's not something that, you know, anybody could come out on. And there's a few other factors that we consider. But for example, we had a new volunteer come out to an install yesterday.
Okay.
And had a great time. And we just sort of check in beforehand. We go over a few safety elements. And then a lot of the learning, like the more technical learning, happens while you're on the install.
How is it with you guys as far as funding? How easy or hard is it to get funding?
We primarily are funded by grants. We've had some really great partnerships. In particular, shout out to Independent Public Media Foundation here in the city, who supported us over a couple of years. But yeah, we've had a decent amount of success, I think, through grant applications. Mm-hmm. And we're always continuing to apply and seek out different grants. One thing we would love to see, which is it's really hard to find grant funding that is specifically for building out internet infrastructure, because a lot of that money ends up going to ISPs or, you know, so for example, right now there's this monumental funding coming from the federal government through what's called BEAD, and the state has some X billions of dollars. There's restrictions around like where that money can go and why. And the city of Philadelphia probably won't see any of it because we are deemed an area where there is infrastructure already. But there isn't necessarily infrastructure everywhere in the city. And so there's kind of just these little pockets. There's digital redlining that's happened that's maybe overlooked by some funding opportunities.
Yes.
I'd love to see more funding available for public infrastructure, for sure. But that being said, we've had lots of great success and great support by grant funders. And then, yeah, we do receive some donations. But yeah, those are our funding sources.
Is there anything that you would like to add that you want the public to know about?
I hope that the public knows that there are so many people in Philadelphia working towards problem solving, and we're just one of so many community organizations. We really value our partnerships, whether they're with other organizations or with community members and individuals. And we hope that people who are in challenging circumstances can feel comfortable reaching out to us and asking for our service or asking for information from us. We want to be available for community members. And we look forward to continuing to work with other groups, whether they're organizations or maybe even like the city of Philadelphia itself. We're very excited to keep working together to keep expanding what we're offering and find ways to kind of integrate it into other related issues, such as community garden, land ownership, and environmental issues, and all sorts of other things.
To find out more about getting Wi-Fi in your community, go to the website phillycommunitywireless.org or call 215-316-5761. On the website, you'll see all of their social platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Most people know Philadelphia as a city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. What you might not know is that we're also called America's Garden Capital. One map, published in Philadelphia's official urban agricultural plan, depicts over 450 active gardens within city limits. Block by block reporter Jennifer Robnett visited Cesar Iglesias Garden in Kensington, where she spoke with two gardeners about the spiritual aspects of gardening as they prepared for a Day of the Dead celebration coming up this weekend.
Cesar Iglesias Garden, located at 425 Arlington Street, in a way is a tale of two Cesars, one living and one dead.
I'm Cesar Viveros, visual artist, and I've been in the garden, I guess, since its inception in the year 2012, so it's make it 14 years.
Viveros was kind enough to take a break from planning their upcoming Dia de Muertos, or Day of the Dead celebration, to join me and another garden member named Zeph for a conversation in their woodshed.
So your name is Cesar, and then this garden is named after a Cesar.
Such a coincidence. And there is also, it is because there is this writer and activist from Puerto Rico. His name is Cesar Andreu Iglesias. Kind of like honoring the Puerto Rican population. That's how the name come up. I know that his daughter knew about the garden. She in Puerto Rico. I know somehow we got in communication. She was so proud that a garden, an activist place, got his father's name.
This Cesar, after whom the garden is named, died in 1976. He was a lifelong labor organizer and political activist, much like the members of Philly Socialists that founded the space. But the gardens don't exist to evoke the legacy of a single person. There is an ongoing tradition here of honoring lives lived with more life in the form of trees, flowers, bushes, and compost they lovingly cultivate year-long. A significant number of these plants are dedicated to loved ones from the community who have died in recent years. These plants are living proof that we can grow, even as we grieve.
I remember the first time that kind of thing crossed my mind in the garden. It was when my brother passed away. And then later on, in a more like painful instance, my wife passed away. She died in 2018. And that was like, for me, that was like, it was horrible. I mean, like, nobody can imagine that, really. I mean, it just disrupted my life, my kid's life. We took her body to Mexico, close to her family, but cemetery is too far. It's hard to get there as a family, to go back to visit. One of the things that I appreciate from the garden, somebody mentioned that we would like to plant a tree. This idea that in the garden you can always have something that you consider sacred, and it's kind of like the portal to that other world. She's not in person anymore, but anything that reminds me of her is a good thing.
I mean, I think in terms of the garden as commemorating the dead, there's like a lot of different stories. For instance, we have Forsythia over here, and that came from La Finquita, which was a garden over at Master and Lawrence, and they got the land bought out from under them. One of the neighbors, his son, I think, was killed, but they planted that Forsythia for him. They wanted to save like some of their plants, so the Forsythia was one of them that we brought here. And then like next to that is where we had planted the Juneberry for your wife.
Juneberry.
And so there's this sort of layering of the stories and where the plants have come from and the different meanings that they hold. You know, for instance, the lilies all came from Miss Kathy, who lived over here, and she had a huge garden, and she was sort of known in the neighborhood as the herbalist. Like, people would go to her for different herbs, and she was an older Puerto Rican woman. The house over here next to our patio was where she had her garden, and that got sold, and they dug up her whole garden, and she like died the next year. Like, that was her livelihood.
Would you say she was on her 80s?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
So basically, like, she was like every day outside. One of the things that I remember she grew the most is the gandul. For Puerto Ricans, they cook rice with gandul, arroz con gandules. So the gandul is the little bean. She was so proud of that. On the harvest time, it's like when she see her kids more often. So when she didn't have that, it's like I can only imagine.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I guess that's why I guess we're still doing Day of the Dead. In a way, it's part of the grieving, but it's part of the life of letting go.
Block by Block listeners are invited to join the festivities on Saturday, November 9th from 5 to 8 p.m. You can find more details on Iglesias Gardens Instagram or visit iglesiasgardens.com to learn more about their mission.
The Dornsife Center is a community hub in West Philadelphia's Powelton Village neighborhood. This year, the center is celebrating a decade of service, and over the past 10 years, it's become a trusted resource in the community that offers a wide range of free programs and services. Among other things, the center offers economic empowerment resources, arts and culture programming, health and wellness services, and computer education classes. Block by Block reporter Sherry Pennington brings us this story.
I recently talked to Dr. Chris Spahr, the newly appointed executive director. I asked him, what is the Dornsife Center and what inspired him to want to be the new executive leader?
I came across the Dornsife Center as a resident of the neighborhood before being an employee there. And I always saw it as a very interesting place. I'd never seen a center at a university that does the depth and level of outreach that the Dornsife Center does in West Philadelphia. Drexel can provide intellectual resources and support to the communities around it. The communities in turn can provide input to Drexel as to how to exist as a university within an urban setting. It's a center that leverages all of Drexel's resources to provide support to the communities around Drexel. Our student-facing center is the Lindy Center for Civic Engagement, where students can go and learn about volunteer opportunities in the community, There's the Excite Center, where folks go if they want to do community-based research. They can go there for all sorts of resources to be engaged with the community in a research perspective. And then there's the Dornsife Center, where I am, which is the community-facing center.
What are some of the programs happening at the Dornsife Center?
One example is the law school. The law school at Drexel has a community lawyering clinic here. It is a free clinic for residents to come to get help with estate planning, wills, to get help with housing issues. They bring in an outside nonprofit partner to run an expungement clinic here for folks who are in prison, folks who are just out of prison. It's really free legal support. The School of Nursing and Health Professions has a health outreach clinic here where they do blood pressure tests, where they do vaccines, where they go out and do community education around health issues. The Westfall School of Media Arts and Design has dance and music classes for kids after school here. You know, that's just some small examples. We have 31 ongoing programs here at the Dornsife Center. We're a 1.2 acre campus. We are three active buildings. We have one building that we're bringing online. It's an old community center, which used to be a Boys and Girls Club.
I also spoke to Bana Gabre, who runs one of the programs within the Dornsife Center.
I oversee our economic inclusion work, and a lot of that is based at the Beachville Family Learning Center, which is placed at the Dornsife Center and is our hub for workforce and adult education programming. The center came about through supporting Drexel's Hire Local initiative and really recognizing that economic inclusion requires a holistic approach. It goes beyond letting folks know about available jobs, but really ensuring that they have the tools and resources to be able to get those jobs that are going to be able to sustain their family and help them build wealth. With that in mind, part of the Beachville Family Learning Center is our computer lab, which has been in operation for a little over 10 years, where folks can come in to utilize the devices, receive some support. We actually have two Drexel students, usually computer science majors, who are always on site to provide one-on-one support for folks who are navigating the computer. We also provide digital skills training, and every graduate of our self-paced digital skills class gets a free laptop. And since we've done that initiative, we've distributed over 500 laptops, and we still have more to give. So we definitely want to make sure people know about this. The beauty of the class is that it's self-paced. It's utilizing a website called North Star Online Learning. The amount of time it takes people to complete it really varies. You know, if it's your first time using the computer, the modules and lessons are really designed to really help you. We've seen folks complete it within hours. We have six modules that we ask folks to complete to make sure that they have the foundational skills. It covers, you know, internet basics, email, operating system. We let folks choose their own elective module, which could be Word, Excel, PowerPoint, social media. And once you finish the six, you're invited to complete more modules. There's over 14 modules that folks can complete, and you do get a certificate, which is recognizable nationwide and is a great way to increase your skills and feel confident in putting it on your resume.
The best way to plug into the Dornsife Center, I always say, is come to a community dinner the second Tuesday of the month. What happens at community dinners is the culinary school here at Drexel, under the direction of Chef Richard Pepino, will prepare a meal for everybody to be here. They're always delicious meals. And then there are resources. For example, the Beachville Family Learning Center will have a table there, as well as the law school, as well as the nursing school, as well as all the resources. Everything that happens at the Dornsife Center will be out for folks to come look at, talk to people, sign up for programs. But we also, you know, you can walk in the door any day of the Dornsife Center that we're open, and anybody can walk in the door. You don't have to be from a certain zip code. You don't have to have an ID. You don't have to be a Drexel student. You don't have to be affiliated at all. You can walk in the door and you can talk to folks in our front office about the various programming here and see if any of it applies to you. But if you have legal needs, if you have health needs, if you have workforce needs, if you have kids who need a free after-school program, come and inquire about those programs, and then we can connect you with the program that is best suited for you. And it might be multiple programs. We love it when people come here to get a vaccine and realize there's a legal clinic here and they can go get legal help, and then realize that they can go down and use the computer lab. You know, some people will come here for one thing, not realizing there's all these other things here. So if we can provide some level of wraparound services so that when you come onto this campus, you can meet multiple needs. That's really what we want people to know, is that it's not just the one program you're coming for, but you can access all the different programs that are here.
Okay, that sounds great. And that prompts two more questions. So for the dinner, do you have to pre-register at all?
Nope.
How many meals they're going to serve? No. Okay.
No, which makes it challenging sometimes because, you know, last night we were like, oh, we're going to have enough food. But no, you just show up. You register at the door. We like to, you know, have people register so that we can keep in touch with folks. And
okay, Bon, what else do you want to tell us about the program?
We are open Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And then on Fridays, we're open from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Folks can walk in whenever to use the computers or to sign up for our digital skills classes or participate in the classes since they are self-paced. I also wanted to share, too, that the Beachville Family Learning Center does even more beyond digital skills. We also do hiring events, on-site hiring events, where you can get on-site interviews to receive jobs. We work with different credentialing programs as well, apprenticeship programs. You can learn more about that on our website. And for any inquiries, folks can call into the computer lab during our hours. And our phone number is 215-571-4056. We're really here to support you. So we're just excited for you, everyone, to come through and take advantage of the resources that we're trying to provide and also provide feedback, because that's something that's really important for us as well. We want to make sure that we are meeting the needs of the community.
To get more information about the Dornsife Center and take advantage of all the free resources, go to www.drexel.edu/Dornsife Center or call 215-571-4013.
The 24th annual Peoplehood Parade takes place in West Philadelphia this weekend. Activists and members of the community will march through the streets holding puppets and signs in support of social justice movements. The event is organized by a group called Spiral Q, which works with community groups to design and build the artwork that will be on display at the parade. Block by Block reporter Natalie Thomas stopped by a recent art build and spoke with Spiral Q co-director Liza Goodell to find out more.
Spiral Q is an arts and social justice nonprofit. We work with activists, neighbors, and youth to create art that can be used as a tool to amplify what's important to them. Peoplehood is a parade and giant puppet pageant that has been happening for 24 years in West Philadelphia, and it brings together all those people I was talking about before, the activists, the youth, and the neighbors, to create art about what they're working on and what they want to represent, and to tell their stories and walk in solidarity through the streets of West Philly. Puppets can be used to tell stories that people can't, and they can, like, be done on a scale that you can't see from far away, and so they grab a lot of attention and get more attention in the press. As far as the Peoplehood pageant, we've definitely found that it's a way to touch on topics that are hard for parents to talk about, or maybe they haven't thought about talking about with their kids, for them to leave and like do more research into some of the topics. So puppets are definitely more accessible to kids. And we're always aware also of like how to keep it kid friendly, because sometimes it can get a little scary. So I think we're going to have around 40 groups in the parade. But so far in our art builds, we've been working with a lot of different groups who are working around Free Palestine movement, whether that's the angle of healthcare workers or professors or Jewish Voice for Peace. We have probably at least 5 or 6 groups working around that. We're working with No Arena in Chinatown Coalition around the potential development of the 76ers Arena in Chinatown and how that will negatively affect, in their opinion, the neighborhood. We're working with, right now in our studio, we have an abortion defense group who goes out to clinics to protect people who are trying to get abortions. The goal of Peoplehood is to bring people together, to kind of create spaces for people to work on what's important to them, but then also have overlap. So in our studio space, people are really making our work side by side, and they might not agree on the tactics in which they're organizing or even the issues that they're organizing around, but they're learning about each other's work and creating relationships.
I think that a lot of people who we work with don't engage in the arts. Like, they might know the value of the arts, but there's some barriers as adults a lot of the time to feel like you're good at it. You're told you're good or you're bad. And so we sort of create the conditions for them to have a positive experience with art and have pride in it. And a lot of the work we do is collaborative, usually. And so people can opt in and out of what feels good for them, but then also have ownership of that. Like, a lot of times it ends with people pointing at a thing and being like, I made that. And how much more effective art is when it's made by a human. You could get these banners made at a print shop, but what does it mean to have all these different hands on it and for it to be clearly like the time and effort to be made by humans? So we're living in really dark times that can feel really isolating, and peoplehood is about being with people and celebrating people for how the work they're doing in the world to make it a more just and liberated and beautiful place. And so that's the power of art, to bring people together to be with their humanity. Peoplehood is on November 9th. It starts at the Paul Robeson House at 50th and Walnut, and it parades to Clark Park at 45th and Chester. The parade lines up at noon and steps off at 1 p.m. And everyone is invited to join the parade, whether they see us passing by or they come to the lineup, you can join in.
On a final note, the union representing SEPTA workers in the city of Philadelphia could go on strike as soon as Friday morning. SEPTA's contract with the Transportation Workers Union Local 234 expires at midnight on Thursday, November 7th, and the group has already authorized a strike. If a strike takes place, no SEPTA buses or metro routes will run. That includes the Market Frankford line, Broad Street line, and trolleys. But SEPTA says most regional rail lines will continue to run on a modified schedule. You can find more details at SEPTA.org.
Block by Block is produced by Lisa Barnes, Marion Nickvair, Sherry Pennington, Jennifer Robnett, Sultan Smalley, Natalie Thomas, and us,
Julia Lowe,
and K. Michelle Watson. Sultan Smalley is our board operator tonight.
Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor for WPPM. Peta Liu is Radio Operations Manager, and Allison Durham is WPPM's Radio Program Manager.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of Block by Block, featuring more stories about issues affecting life in the Philly region. And you can find past episodes of the show on PhillyCam SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you find your podcasts.
Thanks for listening.